Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to film sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at filmsociology.tumblr.com. The voice who's normally saying that last bit is Kobe Slagle. He is on vacation, so I am hosting and producing. I love multitasking. But hanging out with me in studio today is the Film Yaps and IFJA member Joe Shearer. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Thank you for hanging out, and I know it's we're in the midst of not only the holidays but grown-up movie season, and we will be talking about the IFJA awards that were handed out, not personally handed out.
Right.
Jessica Chastain won't let us.
Right.
Anyway, we'll talk about those a bit. We have a big news item, of course, that we need to discuss involving the film The Interview, but it should be noted, of course, Kobe was not here last week. Last week was his birthday. This week, it is my birthday. Mm-hmm. So about 9:30 this morning, I officially turned 45. I'm a man. I'm 40 plus 5. And because of that, I'm giving a present to myself, to you, the listeners, because the show isn't self-indulgent enough already. Here's a little piece of audio self-indulgent. My present to me, to you. You're welcome, I think.
Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
Hi, I'm Emma Sosi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Meow.
My name is Angelo Pizzo, and I'm listening to Film Sociology.
Hi, this is Afi Sequeira, the host of Afi Party on Food Network,
You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Hi there, I'm Claire Robinson, and I'm so excited to be talking to Film Sociology on WFYI in Indianapolis.
Hi, I'm Chef Danny Boone from Recipe Rehab, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Hey, this is Doug Jones, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Hi, it's Ellie Krieger, and you are listening to Film Sociology, WFYI-FM.
Hi, I'm F. Murray Abraham. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Yo, this is Fred the Hammer Williamson, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI in Naptown. Know what I'm saying? Keep listening. You might learn something.
Hey, this is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
Hi, I'm Ingrid Hoffman from Latin Delight and Simply Delicioso. You are listening to Film Sociology, WFYI in Indianapolis.
Hola, amigos. Soy Ingrid Hoffman de Delicioso y de Latin Delight. Estás escuchando Film Sociology aquí en WFYI in Indianapolis.
Hi, everybody. This is Joel Hobson. I'm the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI in Indianapolis.
This is Jonathan Scott with the Property Brothers, and this is Film Sociology with Matthew on WFYI.
Hello there. This is Kerwin, the prehistoric rubber chicken from the Svengoolie show on MeTV, and I wanted to remind you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis, which is like Indian no place.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and in case you didn't know it, and you probably should, you are listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Hey, what up? Jason Eves here. You're listening to WFYI Indy, man. Film Sociology up in this PCHA speech.
Hey, guys, I'm Molly Sims, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI in Indianapolis.
Hi, Mrs. Sosi.
Hi, this is Padma Lakshmi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI FM radio.
This is Peter Bogdanovich, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI radio.
Hi, this is Rich Coase, and I just wanted you to know that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. It could have been in Berwyn, but it isn't.
Hi, I'm Robert Irvine, and you're listening to Film Sociology, WFI in Indianapolis.
This is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
This is Sammy Terry being terrorized with you with Film Sociology. Have many pleasant nightmares.
Hi, I'm Stuart McLean, host of The Vinyl Cafe, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Could you turn up the volume, please? You're not going to hear me if you don't know. Hello there. I'm Sven Gulli from ETV, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. FYI? FYI? And also, never mind.
Hey there, it's Ted Allen from Chopped on the Food Network, and you are listening to Film Sociology with Matthew Sosi on WFYI Indianapolis.
Well, hello there. My name is Zamantee Tombstone from the Svengoolie program on MeTV, and I wanted to advise you that you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis. I flunked sociology, so good luck.
Hey, everyone, this is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis. Hi, you're listening to Film Sociology, WFYI Indianapolis. Have a groovy time listening it.
As Joe Shearer knows, anytime I can incorporate sound bits into the program... because Joe is a part of it. Joe and, yes. And Chris and some of the other IFJA guys, your contributions are heard year-round. So this is also my way of saying thank you. But, yes, that was some of the more famous people that I've had on the show that have talked to me, and I think they're my BFFs, some more than others. You can figure that out, but, yeah. That's. Yeah. And, yes, somebody cursed my name when Gail Kim was being was on the show.
Yeah, yeah. And happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Okay, before we get to the big movies that are opening this week, I guess we need to address Sony Pictures kind of losing its spine by pulling the interview out of theaters. Now, of course, not been the best month for Sony. Between getting hacked, some of their movies that normally shouldn't wind up on East Washington Street apparently are for bootlegging, and I'm sorry, and West Washington Street. Let's be fair, but of course the threats from this group that is not too happy with the film The Interview, a film which apparently James Franco and Seth Rogen do assassinate Kim Jong-un in it. They finally released that bit of information that it is a film that makes fun of a dictator, but this one actually. The guy dies. So Kim Jong-un, not too happy. Mm-hmm. His dad had, I think, a slightly better sense of humor, I'm guessing.
Apparently. Team America did make it out.
It did make it out. There's lots of people, I'm sure there are other world leaders that are kind of ticked that somebody beat Kim Jong-un to the punch. I'm not going to name them. You can figure them out.
Yeah.
And the films that they didn't like. So anyway, Sony decided to pull it out of theaters. We were supposed to have a screening of it this week. It didn't happen. There's a few reporters across the country who have seen it. I know. I think NPR had one of them on for All Things Considered. Joe, do you think this is going to set a precedent?
Well, I mean, it's kind of scary to think that it could, right? That,
yeah.
You know, this random, allegedly random hacker groups who may or may not be based in North Korea. Yeah, they've if nothing else, they pulled a brilliant campaign. And my kind of the thing I was thinking of was that, you know, during this whole thing was really impressive the way they kind of slow burned this whole thing. You know, you start out by, you know, just roasting everyone, right? Leaking all these emails, leaking all this personal information. You know, the president got insulted in some, you know, by some random joke that Amy Pascal made. Next thing you know, you know, they're threatening a 9/11 style attack on
multiplexes,
movie theaters,
yeah.
Right? And you're kind of like, this just sounds ludicrous. There's no way. But they finally got us. They, you know, the big American thing is we don't negotiate with terrorists, and we are, you know, we have our freedom. Well, they found the one way to get us, the one thing we're afraid of, and it's not attack. It's not, you know, us being killed in some sort of a explosion in movie theater. It is litigation. And they got Sony Pictures afraid that, you know, even if some prankster comes in and drops a smoke bomb somewhere or throws a firecracker and people flip out and somebody gets injured, Sony could get sued. You know, much less if, you know, the worst happens.
And remember that, folks. That's more of the threat as opposed to crashing a plane into your favorite multiplex in the suburbs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing, just to clarify, because there was early, especially, like you said, in the slow burn early on, there were questions of, is this a major publicity stunt by Sony? Sony would not let emails like that get out.
No.
That's a major, major black eye to everybody involved with that company. I remember seeing the picture. I think it was Angelina Jolie seeing one of the execs, and it was you know, hashtag awkward at some social event. No way Sony's going to put themselves in this position to look bad in order to market a Seth Rogen and James Franco movie. I jokingly refer to James Franco as a performance artist. Mm-hmm. No way he's pulling an elaborate stunt like this.
No.
So ladies and gentlemen, I guess the only thing I can say is over the weekend, I remember this reminds me of when there was the theater shooting, you know, go out to a midnight movie. And at that time I said, go to a midnight movie. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't go to a movie this weekend at the theaters, watch Team America.
Yeah,
watch
yeah.
The Great Dictator. Watch The Dictator, the Sacha Baron Cohen picture.
Mm-hmm.
Watch a film that just makes a world, even a president, that makes some world leader look foolish.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can, I guess. And it's an old hack joke because, well, I'm 45, I do those. But they've won if you've not seen a film that makes a world leader look like a buffoon.
And there were people wanting to hold screenings of Team America.
I know. And then
Paramount
said, yeah, Paramount said, yeah. No, thanks, don't do that. Yeah. So do it on your own. Do it at home.
Yeah.
They can't get you there, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
But this might set a strange kind of precedent, and we're hoping it obviously doesn't go down that path, because it, you know, movies are supposed to be an escape. You know, apparently nobody told Kim Jong-un it's just a movie, but then again, you know, nobody's made a film about you and I being assassinated. Mm-hmm. Not yet, at least. Mm-hmm. So, so, well, there's one, you know, and there's always one film that opens on Christmas Day, or especially on a major event like July 4th. There's always one film that's kind of going to be left by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And apparently the Interview wins that by default. So Unbroken, you're lucky. We'll talk about films that open on Christmas next week. But
maybe it was a plot by Angelina Jolie. Maybe not. Maybe we're looking in the wrong place. It's an elaborate set up by her, not by Seth Rogen, James Franco.
I don't want Angelina Jolie mad at me. That was, and by the way, in all honesty, I don't know if I really, I don't need to see another film version of Cleopatra, even if it is Angelina Jolie. Yeah. So sorry.
I'm not saying she was wrong in the email at all.
No, but yeah, the president might like these movies.
Yeah,
that's really bad. That's
pretty bad.
That's really bad. Yeah. That's like some of my best friends are ...
Right, right.
So okay, well, there's that, folks. Not really hard hitting, and it's not these viewpoints do not represent those of the IFJA, the FilmNAP, or WFYI. But
although individually, I'm sure
something
there's a lot of agreement there.
There you go. All right, opening in theaters today, actually this week. It opened a couple of days ago, but finally, The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies, the third and final installment of J.R. Tolkien's novel about Bilbo, even though he's barely in this one. Mm-hmm. Four screenwriters, including Guillermo del Toro, who we normally enjoy, is involved with this. It is the last third. You saw it, right?
I did not.
You did not? Okay. Well, I'll fill you in on this one.
Okay.
As you know, I'm 45, mm-hmm. I am older now, I am crabbier now. You can hear a little bit of myself, Ed Johnsonat, and Chris Lloyd on No Limits this coming Tuesday. We recorded a show that's going to be on Tuesday at 1 o'clock on WFYI. And I said then, and I've said it a few times, this is my 2015 New Year's resolution. I think I'm done with wizards and hobbits and mm-hmm. and dystopian society, and the fate of the world is in a teenager's hands. Mm-hmm. I'm also sticking with the rule, one book, one film.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm really done. And Chris Lloyd, who I think is the Hobbit correspondent expert of the IFJA, even said it's a bit – he leans on – two films of The Hobbit. You don't need three.
Yeah.
I'm done. Really done. I mean, Harry Potter and Twilight and Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Wrench it up. Get a better screenwriter.
Yeah. Yeah. The indication for us with The Hobbit especially was the 25-minute dishwashing scene in the first movie. And, you know, I took my son to see that, my oldest son, who's now 9. He would have been, what, 7, I think, at
How'd that
time.
How'd that work out for you?
He fell asleep.
No.
He missed literally everything that was worth seeing. I was myself was kind of dozing off here and there, and I get to the end and there's Gollum and there's all this, you know, all this action and stuff happening, and I'm just so angry. I'm like, I don't even care about any of this at this point. I just want to leave. I did not see the second movie, and I have not seen this one. I'm guessing I won't.
Well, I said, because it's already open, but I guess so the other question, are the kids interested?
They kind of said they wanted to, but they're...
You can tell?
Yeah. Yeah, there's that, I kind of want to see that. And I'm sitting there thinking, not so much. You know, we'll go if they ask. You know, I'll definitely take them. Yeah, but
okay.
I get the feeling that this will come and go, and they will go, oh, yeah, that's right, we didn't see that.
I remember doing that with Shark Tale. I was like, no, honey, that movie is gone. No.
You chose wisely.
Yeah, I did. So... The thing going into this, like, you know, the films themselves, they're well made. It's Peter mm-hmm. Jackson. It looks good. I like Martin Freeman. Good for him. He's getting mm-hmm. an enormous check, and he's taking a break from being Dr. Watson. And by the way, he's barely in this. It's the title. It is the Battle of the Five Armies. You have five armies fighting. It's almost so. It took four screenwriters to create what feels like the Raid in Middle Earth or the Raid 2 in Middle Earth. You know, I remember watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and you know, I think first film, lots of walking and talking, really bored. Mm-hmm. Second film, not as much walking and talking. Stuff was happening. So the ball was rolling. Third one, there's lots of fights, and it's slam bang, and it was a lot of, I enjoyed it for the most part, and then we get to the 9 endings.
Yeah.
So I'm going in anticipating this same situation with The Hobbit. Thankfully, the film is like 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh,
so it's shorter than the others by that comparison. Mm. But as Chris pointed out, it's really about this guy, maturing and finding himself and getting the sense of adventure. And it's a long, basically almost a 2-hour battle sequence, it feels.
Yeah.
And I've seen, I didn't have the same excitement with Return of the King as I did, compared to this one. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of flat. Even when there's a fun, it's not really a spoiler ending, but the two Ians meet at the end, which is kind of nice. It's a nice little button, but it's well done. But I was tired. Mm-hmm. I was exhausted. I don't care. So it's well made, but doesn't really do anything. If you're, I guess, and there are people that are into fantasy and Middle Earth stuff way more than I am. Enjoy it. You can have it. Yeah. But I'm done.
The rest of us have Shire fatigue.
I think so. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what Peter Jackson's going to do next. I know the last time he did something that wasn't set in Middle Earth was The Lovely Bones, and nobody saw it. Although we saw it.
We didn't have to see it, but we did.
We did. Remember, that was a double feature of press screenings. We saw The Lovely Bones and then Up in the Air.
Yeah.
It would have been... I've mentioned this many times, but it would have been a hell of a lot different if it was flipped.
Yes.
It'd be just dragging out of the theater. So, anyway, it's out there. I think as you said, because I can't find the sound clips because I'm not Kobe, but y'all loved it. I didn't as much, so it's out there. All right, also opening in theaters today, speaking of a film, it was the opposite where I was not looking forward to seeing it because I've seen two versions of it. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be a little better than I thought, and it's the new musical version of Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back. I know a lot of people that love the John Huston version. I love John Huston. I didn't think he had any business filming a musical, despite having a really solid grown-up cast. I mean, you have Carol Burnett and Bernadette Peters and Tim Curry and Albert Finney. Albert Finney sings okay.
He's no Russell Crowe.
Wow, you just made Ed Johnson out wince. Well, you made a lot of people wince. The complaint is, if you have a musical, I want to see the musical numbers. Don't cut. It's not nearly as bad as Richard Attenborough's Chorus Line, but kind of close at times. Then you had a made-for-TV version with Victor Garber's Daddy Warbucks, who could sing better, and Kathy Bates' Miss Hannigan. That's not bad. And it was directed by a up-and-coming filmmaker named Rob Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
This was the film he did before Chicago. So now we have the director of Easy A, who is writing and who's co-wrote and is directing this. And two of the producers on this, of course, if you know early on, well, Jay-Z is involved, of course, and you can tell with especially Heart Knock Life.
Yeah.
And but Will and Jada Smith were producers on this. And, of course, there was early on that their daughter was going to be the star.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to beat the kid up because we've already done – we've hit the Smith kids pretty hard with their film choices and the film work in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that she is not involved with this, but they got the girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild, and it's a smart move. She does a really, really nice job. There's a little bit of attitude, but not too much, and there's a little bit of sass and not too much, and the girl can sing, but – tomorrow, those who know musical theater, tomorrow is a song I don't ever, never, never, ever have to listen to again.
Yeah.
And my Emma, thank God, has no desire to play Annie, and now she's too old, which is great. But this is a song that most little girls, especially in community theater, swing for the fences with and don't come close. And much to the credit of this young lady, It's an understated performance, and she does it. Quizzani Wallace.
Quevenzie
Wallace. Doesn't need the swing for the fences on tomorrow, and I think that's a smart move. She's not trying to be Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls.
Right, right.
And by the way, Jennifer Hudson hit it out of the ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
So now, yes, we have an African-American version of Annie. It's not The Wiz. It is, you know, there's a couple of original songs, not needed. But we have, and it's a modern setting. Instead of Daddy Warbucks, Jamie Foxx plays a multi-billionaire cell phone mogul who wants to be mayor. And,
right,
of course,
his name is Will Stax, right? Which you can convert to Bill Stack. He has lots of money.
Yeah, he has lots of money. Subtle. And and of course, you have Bobby Cavallari and Rose Byrne as his campaign crew. And then you have the cartoonish performance of Cameron Diaz as Miss Hannigan. She does not run an orphanage, but she has five foster children just for the checks. I'm like, okay, that's a modern idea. I get it. And yeah, making the recreation of Daddy Warbucks. Okay, that's fine. And yeah, having to have a kid for political purposes and then you grow attached to her. Okay, that's a fine. That's all right. I can handle that. That's not bad. And the music, again, it's revamped up a little bit. It's got a more modern sound. And the music, I'm not terribly upset about that. I can't sing worth snot, so it's okay. And it's also set in modern day New York, which is fine. Actually, there's a few nice moments of Annie running around the city and embracing this. Okay, so the city is her friend, and she has, you know, the guy who works in the store across the street and the restaurant that she goes to. There's a running bit about finding her parents at this restaurant on a Friday night. Those are really nice moments, and they help balance out or overcome some of the shortcomings. For me, the biggest one is Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
She's, like I said, a kind of over-the-top performance when nobody else is going over the top, which really stands out. Her singing is fine. There's also a plot point. I don't think I'm giving away a lot of her being in cahoots with somebody from Jamie Foxx's campaign team to adopt the girl and get the money. And that didn't work over all that well for me. And then there's a change of heart only because Cameron Diaz is playing the role of Miss Hannigan.
Right.
That not necessary at all. So, the other two minor bits, again, that's the biggest complaint. And so, I mean, that's not gonna derail a film. The other part is I'm done with it. We're almost 2015. I'm done with the germaphobe jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie Foxx's character perfect timing, Joe. Jamie Foxx's character is Mr. Hand Sanitizer, and he doesn't like to touch people. And I'm like, I think Ben Stiller ran this joke into the ground in Along Came Polly, which is, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, and Jodie Foster is a germaphobe in Nim's Island, and every other person doesn't like it. It feels like that's an old comedic cliche now, is the person that doesn't want to be touched. And Jamie Foxx's character doesn't like to touch people, and they're sneezing, and they're spitting, and all these bits of social media used in the film. I got it.
Yeah.
Move on.
It's actually done to good effect in the Iron Man films with Tony Stark because it's so subtle, right? It's always like under his breath, and it's kind of, you know, and then Gwyneth Paltrow just kind of takes stuff, right? It's like, you know, he only accepts it from her. So, yeah, it's overdone. Yeah, you're right.
Don't need
that.
Yeah, the other part that cracked me up in Annie, and it was anybody who knows this, it just made us chuckle. There's an event that, and Annie is going to all these social events so she can be seen with Jamie Foxx and get the pictures taken. And there's one where he has to leave a party early. She is there with her friends, and they're having a great time. And it should be noted, it's a Friday night. And Friday night is the night that Annie goes and hangs out in front of the little Italian restaurant where her parents left her. And she waits out there every Friday with hopes to see them. On a Friday night, this is when this happens. And this social event that Daddy Warbucks, and Annie are at on a Friday night, they're having this event. And then the campaign manager tells Jamie Foxx's character, you need to be at the coin toss for the Jets-Giants game.
On a Friday
night. A pro football game on a Friday night.
Yeah. I hear Friday night's a great night for football.
If you're in high school.
If anybody gets that one, send Matthew Sosie an email.
Yeah, send me an email on it. Or send it to the Film app on it. But that's a little tiny thing. That's like with But the nerds in the audience are yelling. Well, we were yelling shenanigans. I'll say that. So
well, that's just a detail people should get.
They really should. This was like when I was watching Rock of Ages. If you're setting a film in 1987, I don't want to hear Skid Row because their first album didn't come out till 89. Yeah, I know this. Yeah. I don't want to hear or see music that was not released then. Mm-hmm. So you got to get these little details right, because then they're not going to notice a difference. Yeah, we notice a difference on this.
Yeah.
That being said, these are the minor nitpicking things, because that's what critics do. We are loud about the minor things. But that being said, if you can get past all that, and apparently some of you can do it better than us, it's worth checking out. It's good. It'll hopefully introduce a new generation of kids to musical theater. And apparently, everyone for this one, nobody's knickers are as wadded up tightly for this as they are for Into the Woods, which opens next week.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it. Has it made a bazillion dollars, or how's it doing?
What, Annie?
Annie, yeah.
I don't know. This is the opening week. Okay. I mean, it opened today, so we'll find out over the weekend. I know... I just got a feeling, The Hobbit's just going to run rampant over everything, so fine. Yeah. Also opening in theaters, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb.
Yeah, haven't we had that one already?
No.
That one has been out a couple times.
Did you
see
it?
No, I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
I hear that they spend time in a museum at night.
With Ben Stiller.
Right.
Okay.
And it is Robin Williams' last movie. Is that officially his last movie?
I think this was officially the last one, because I talked to a couple colleagues and said there is, when you see Williams' final moment, it's pretty touching for a third film of Night at the Museum. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Also opening in theaters. Now, I would say this is the film you should go see.
Yes.
And you can read our colleague Ed Johnson-Ott's review of it in Nuvo. This is a film I'm kind of going right out there. This is a film that's in my top five, and it's the film Wild.
Yeah. If it's not top five for me, it's definitely top 10.
So, Joe, I've been gabbing a lot. You tell folks about Wild.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Let me say, when I first saw the trailer to this movie a couple of months ago, you could hear my eyes rolling.
Talking about this. Where there's a lot of films that we enjoyed that if we did just the one sentence pitch. Mm-hmm. I think, a lot of people are just going to turn the station right off.
Yeah.
Like, we refer to Locke as, Tom Hardy in a car movie.
Yeah.
Or The Imitation Game is, Benedict Cumberbatch decoding things.
Yeah.
And this one, yes, it is kind of known as Reese Witherspoon walking.
Yeah, she finds herself in the desert. A young woman.
On a horse with no name.
Right. A young woman after strife in her life goes to the desert to find herself. And I was like, oh, good grief, really? I'm going to have to sit through this movie. But it
you
is,
did.
Yeah, but I did, and I very happily did toward the end. And there are many reasons for that. First and foremost, it's a terrific movie. It's not a solo Reese Witherspoon show, although there are there's a lot of screen time where it's just her.
I think she's in every scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say about 95% of the time. But there is some human interaction.
Yeah, yeah. She interacts with a lot of people. Yeah, and it's very good. Yeah, she's had some personal tragedies. We're not really spoiling anything, I don't think, there to say it's her mother has passed away.
Yep, played by Laura Dern.
Laura Dern was fantastic as her mother. And, of course, we see a lot of this through flashbacks. She engages in a lot of self-destructive behavior, including a lot of random encounters with men and,
skin scenes.
Yeah. If you're a fan of such things, it's worth checking out for that.
Right.
But she really gives a terrific performance in this movie.
She does. It's directed by Nick Hornsby did the screenplay. Smart move, by the way.
Yeah.
And it's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, whose last film was Dallas Buyers Club. Not bad.
Yeah, that's a nice 1-2 punch.
That's a nice 1-2 punch. Yeah. What I am like you said, I think the handling of the flashbacks are done really well, especially in the first half, because you find out how she got rock bottom. Yeah. And there's not a lot, there's some voiceover, because there are moments where as Reese is walking on the Pacific Coast Trail by herself, this is 1,000 miles, I think, from Mexico up to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're out there, you tend to talk to yourself at times.
Yeah.
And it's used well. It is not wall-to-wall voiceover. It's not wall-to-wall flashbacks. I think as time goes on, you see the pieces of what causes her self-destructive behavior, you know, what causes her to hit rock bottom, to go on this journey. Mm-hmm. And early on, I mean, there's a cute scene where she's having trouble with this giant backpack that she has to wear, where it's taller and probably heavier than her, and then to finally get up and get moving. It's a fantastic performance from Witherspoon. For me, it is a balance of physically exhausting and emotionally exhausting.
It's
that strong. And the script, when the interactions with other people, it runs the gamut of interactions with people that are good, others that are a little uncomfortable. There's a few moments, especially when she comes across a couple of men, that you're as a film goer and as a critic, you're really, really hoping it doesn't go down a particular path. You have a single attractive woman walking by herself and two guys who are hunters come up. We've seen this horror movie 1,000 times. And there's especially a scene where she comes across a guy who works on the range with a pickup, and you're just starting to get tense, and it dangles just enough and then goes away. It's not that film. It's about her making this journey.
That scene particularly was a great kind of a tease for that sort of thing.
Yep.
And the resolution of it was just perfect. And it's just a moment where you go, okay. I do want to talk about the quick little scene that I really, really enjoyed, where she is sitting on a large hill and she takes off her boots, which, you know, and her boots are this thing. And the, I don't recall what the company is. I remember it was a real company that made the boots. And it was a nice little bit of product placement for them, because, you know, she remarks that she buys these boots that are too small. And the guy that she's meeting with, oh, yeah, you just, you know, go call them over there and they'll mail you another pair overnight. And, you know, and so she gets her brand new boots. But in the meantime, there's a scene where she's sitting out and she's got her boots off and her feet are bleeding and she's in pain. And then she accidentally kicks her boot down the hill. And, you know, and it's a large drop.
Not getting the boot back.
Right. And you're like, oh, what do we do now? And there's a nice resolution to that scene, too.
There is
a lot of fun.
And what I didn't realize, and this was another plus for it, was this, the hiking community, that there are these little stops, for lack of a better term, rest stops, and there are people there to help others, support others, and these scenes where you pick up packages and they're waiting for you.
And the people, she encounters the people and they go, oh yeah, we heard about you on, you know, such and such and such, and
there's these notebooks that people can sign stuff on, and so she gets this little following. So I have to admit, I didn't see this in the theater. I sort of felt bad, but it was one of those. I got up about 4 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. And I watched it at night, and it still worked.
Yeah.
It still worked. So, this is a really, really solid film.
Absolutely.
Really uplifting. And it's an emotional experience to watch, and a physical one, because I think you're tired after watching this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're watching her walk.
Yeah.
So, really happy about this. And the thing about Reese, and I take back, because for many years I would call Reese Witherspoon Miss Perky Pants, and she's got that. Yeah. Not in this.
No.
Not in this. There's some of the, and you know, she used a little bit of that in Walk the Line, and she won Best Actress, and well deserved. She's a solid actress, and the fact that she didn't have to use any of her old tricks, and I'm sure that's probably part of the reason why this was attractive to her. But it is a really, really solid performance, and I hope people go see this and get past the one sentence pitch that a lot of people are giving this.
Yeah, and it's funny to me. This seems like her defining role, even with the Academy Award for Walk the Line.
I agree.
This is the one where you go, this is really what she can do, and she, you know, like you said, knocks it out of the park.
So, absolutely, yeah,
go see it. Absolutely, I was. And the one amongst many who would have thought there's no way this movie is going to be good. It's going to be pretentious and goofy. No, it's none of those. It's really, really a good time. It's a good, good movie.
There you go. Joe Scheer said so. So, and if I had Ben Kingsley screaming, I would put that in here. But anyway, I'm not Kobe. Okay, a few other notes. Just of note, December running today. No, tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Georgetown Cinemas at Georgetown 14. Apparently it's free. You can say this. This is across the road from Lafayette Square. They're showing from 2004 The Polar Express.
Oh, nice.
Do you like that? Very good.
Yeah, I like The Polar Express.
I don't mind it. I know there's a lot of folks, and some of them are our colleagues, that are not into the dead-eye animation.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. I mean, it's a fun little romp, despite the dead eyes. Yeah, I think it's a good story.
It provides atmosphere, and it's sort of this. It's funny how a good Christmas movie sometimes has a little bit of fear added into it, and you know, amidst the wonder and all of that, there's just this little undercurrent of, you know, Santa Claus is this man who comes into your house while you're asleep and messes with your stuff a little bit. And, you know, and that's kind of scary. And there's, and, you know, as a child, you think about it as a child, going to Santa Claus, you know, when you're standing in line to sit on Santa Claus's lap is a nerve-wracking time when you're a young, young child.
So this is why we see the pictures of the crying child on Santa's lap.
Yes, and right. there's always that. And I think they kind of use that dead eye to build a little atmosphere in that movie. And it really works for me. I had no problems with it. It was different. Of course, it was the first movie of its type, really.
Correct.
And, you know, of course, Zemeckis played with it a little bit. And, you know, Christmas Carol and Beowulf. And mm-hmm. But this is the best of those movies, easily. And it's as much a Christmas classic to me as anything.
Yeah, and that's hard to tap into that because, it seems like there's Christmas product every year. And some go by the wayside and others mm-hmm. don't and some should. But anyway, running through December 25th. At Cinemark in Greenwood from 1988, Scrooged.
Very nice.
I need to watch that again because I wonder if Emma would be interested in that.
I have gotten my kids into it a little bit, and they're into it, mostly because it's Peter Venkman. But, it's definitely worth seeing. It's on Netflix right now.
Okay.
So you can check it out. I recently turned it on a weeknight at 7:30 for my daughter to start watching, and it's a little slow at first, and she might. Emma is a little older, so she'll probably get pretty much everything.
She watched Saint Vincent last week.
Yeah, she's used to the mature subject matter.
Well, she knows Garfield. You know, that was the voice of Garfield, and the guy from Rushmore, uh-huh. and he had Grand Budapest. So yeah, so her. Once again, folks, when you show movies to your kids, it may not be whether it's an actor or a particular director. What you think is that person's best work might not be the first thing you turn them on to.
Nope.
Like, I don't think showing Emma Lost in Translation would have been the best bet for the intro to Bill Murray.
No,
but in her case, it was Garfield, and then the dad from the old guy from Rushmore. I'm mm-hmm. like, yes, it says.
Yeah.
Also running December 20th at 7:30 p.m. 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. on the 20th, 2 p.m. on the 21st at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin from 1989, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Can't go wrong there.
I don't know.
This is the thing about Christmas Vacation. It's not a great film at all. It's very poorly made at times.
Have a few eggnogs and it's slightly better.
Yeah.
Except for the kids.
It's got the kitsch factor. Of course,
it's the ugly sweater of Christmas films.
It is, and it's the thing you watch, and I watch and love every single scene of that movie. But there are times when you watch it and you go, "This is just," you know. If you're talking about constructing jokes and you're talking about, you know, making a good film, it's not very successful. But it just has the it factor.
You see, I say that about The Room, and you call me a sadist. But you say it about
that's
this.
That's a whole different level.
I think Tom Russo is slightly more tolerable than Chevy Chase.
Wow.
Well, hey, you've heard the stories of him on Community.
Well, that's true. If we're talking about personal interaction,
okay,
maybe.
But I would say, because the first Vacation film I thought was decent, but mm-hmm. but there was a part of me that went, shut up, go home.
Yeah.
I think A Christmas Story is overrated. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get your angry emails, Nation.
Yeah.
But so this is, well, Randy Quaid when he wasn't quite as crazy, mm-hmm. early crazy Quaid.
Yeah, it just goes over the top, and that's what I like about it. It's not afraid to go over the top. And there's a lot of just...
And because we all go over the top at times for the holidays.
Right, and there's just a lot of little things that I really like about... And I'm not, you know, there's the Chevy Chase on the sled scene is really just weird, and it's not as funny as it could be. Much funnier to me is the scene where... Chevy and Randy Quaid are walking through Walmart, and Chevy Chase is trying to tell him, you know, we're going to buy your kids some Christmas presents because we know you don't have any money. And as they're doing that, Randy Quaid, who has a very large dog, is loading up these 50 50-pound bags of dog food on the cart that, you know, of course, Clark, now Chevy Chase, is going to be paying for. He just continues to load them on. Nothing else but dog food. And then, of course, when he gets to the cuts to the chase and says, "We're going to buy your kids Christmas," he goes, "Oh, you don't have to do that. Well, here's an itemized list. It's in alphabetical order, starting with the oldest."
Gosh.
And then he tells him, "Get yourself something nice. I want to get you something nice. So pick yourself up." So, you know, that's those, you know, little things like that. Of course, you know, the police descending at the end is stupid.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of things where you just go, okay, dumb. But
it's on.
It works.
And
it
it's
works
not on 24 hours on a network channel. Yeah. Don't do
plus,
that.
Plus Carrie Wuer in a swimsuit.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. They, if you can manage to work that in to a movie set in Chicago at Christmas time, you're doing something right.
And I still have a soft spot for Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, yes.
We all do.
Oh,
yes. Also, December 20th, a vintage movie night at the Garfield Park Art Center from 1950, The Great Rupert. This is from the Eric Grayson collection. Ooh. Congratulations, Eric.
Yeah, Hoosier Award winner.
Hoosier Award winner from the IFJA. And the Nutcracker is happening at various theaters. Go to ncm.com on December 21st. They're showing the Nutcracker. Speaking of, good segue, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, of which Joe and I are members.
Speaking of nuts.
We announced our awards earlier this week, and so we'll just kind of quickly go through these. And if you haven't seen these films, you really should. Mm-hmm. Our pick for best film this year was Richard Linklater's film Boyhood,
yes,
which is coming out on video, I think, right at the first week of January.
Yeah.
Runner-up is Whiplash, now in theaters. Mm-hmm. Go check that out.
My personal pick for best movie of the year.
Number three on my list, but then again, next week's show, list could change.
Could always change.
Other finalists, and these are in alphabetical order, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Imitation Game, Life Itself, my number one film pick, Lock, Tom Hardy in a Car,
yes,
A Most Violent Year, and St. Vincent. Mm-hmm. So,
I was really happy to see those blockbusters, you know, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Guardians of the Galaxy getting in.
Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be is probably in my top 10.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll be honest, I still think Captain America the Winter Soldier is a little better than Guardians.
Than Guardians?
Yeah. But I'm okay.
All right.
We're good.
Okay. And I was late to the party on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which I called the most Shakespearean blockbuster since the first Thor. Mm-hmm. So well
Very
done.
Very good. My son loved it too. So
it's good stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Go get some awards and some women and booze and just have a party. Best animated feature, the winner was The Lego Movie. Runner-up was The Box Trolls. Mm-hmm. Not the strongest year for animation, but Lego Movie was fun. Still trying to talk the 13-year-old into watching it.
Yeah.
Best foreign language film. By the way, keep sending us foreign language films.
Please.
We're fine. Mm-hmm. We like to read subtitles in Indiana. It happens. 2 Days, 1 Night. Hi, Marion Cotillard. Mm-hmm. And runner-up is Ida. The documentary winner, my number one film of the year, Life Itself. Mm-hmm. Runner-up, An Honest Liar. Yeah. Best original screenplay, Wes Anderson for The Grand Budapest Hotel. Runner-up, Richard Linklater for Boyhood.
Yes.
Fine, fine films. Best adapted screenplay, Damien Chazelle for Whiplash. Runner-up, Graham Moore for The Imitation Game. Again, go see Whiplash.
Yes. Please.
Best actress, we already mentioned, Reese Witherspoon for Wild. Runner-up, Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl. She could still make me breakfast. Those who know the film know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Best Supporting Actress, and right now, the 2014 Good Sport of the Year, Jessica Chastain for A Most Violent Year. We say that because she retweeted our list. And,
yes, she did.
And we're supposed to be hard-hitting film critics. We thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Runner-up, and thank goodness, Melissa McCarthy for St. Vincent. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to a director.
Yes.
We really appreciate that.
Oddly, a lot of the... I don't know what you call them, award site nerds. You know, the people who hang out on the award site message board.
Not us, of course.
Right. Not at all. They have.
We won't say what they said about you, which they actually could have said about any of us.
Any of us, yes. But they chose me, so thank you very much.
This year. Next year could be one of us.
Yeah, it's somebody different every year. So, but anyway, we got a lot of flack for choosing her. And I don't know if those people have not seen St. Vincent.
Or they don't want to admit it.
Yeah, they want to hate on her. That's good for them.
That's fine. You could do that with Tammy, which I did a little bit. Yes, we know. She's talking about you know, women of different shapes and sizes being allowed to do comedic roles, but she's also doing a lot of fat person fall down, go boom.
I
was worried after Tammy and some of the other films that she was going to be Kevin James with an Academy Award nomination.
And
the fact that she didn't have to do any of that stuff to play the mom in St. Vincent, I think, is a smart choice. Best actor, Ralph Fiennes, Grand Budapest Hotel. Thank you for letting Ralph Fiennes be in a comedy. I'm really happy about that. Runner-up, Tom Hardy in Locke. Hardy's one of the finest actors working today.
Oh, he's so good.
You're going to hear Chris Lloyd and I just, we're just all giddy, and I'm sure others are, about Mad Max that's coming out next summer that he is in. Best supporting actor, really, is J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, and there's nothing else. Nobody else, although the runner-up is Ethan Hawke for Boyhood. Best musical score, Mika Levy, hope I'm saying that right, for Under the Skin. That's the one where Scarlett Johansson devours people, men. And runner-up, Alexandra Desplate for the Grand Budapest Hotel. That's a lot of fun. The original Vision Award, winner was Boyhood. Runner-up for Under the Skin, both really strong choices. Boyhood, the commitment for film, making a film for 12 years is really cool. And as we mentioned already, the Hoosier Award goes to film historian and preservationist Eric Grayson. So congratulations to everybody on that. All right. Also, we're all right on time. This year's National Film Registry of 25 films that they're going to be in the archives, so they're not going anywhere. You can go check these out. Some you know, some you don't. So we'll just get cracking to it. From 2004, the film 13 Lakes. From 1913, Burt Williams' Lime Clin Club Field Day. It's an African-American film. From 1998, The Big Lebowski.
Nice.
Very good. That's the beauty of this list, is it really
ties the list together.
Thank you. Nice. From 1940, Down Argentine Way. From 1919, The Dragon Painter. From 1965, the 13-minute short subject film Felicia. From 1986, John Hughes's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. From 1943, The Gang's All Here. From 1953, House of Wax.
Hey.
Well done. Fun, gimmicky 3D, but it's creepy Vincent Price, and I like that.
The remake, only worthwhile to see Paris Hilton get
killed. Not even worth watching Paris Hilton get killed.
Just YouTube that clip.
From 2000, Into the Arms of Strangers. From 1970, Little Big Man, Dustin Hoffman, Faye Dunaway, fine Western. From 1986, you know this if you're a fan of Pixar, Lexo Jr. From 1980, Moon Breath Beat. From 1976, the what's considered one of the first Chicano feature films, Please Don't Bury Me Alive. From 1933, Preston Sturges' The Power and the Glory. From 1959, Rio Bravo, John Wayne and John Wayne, Ricky Nelson, Dean Martin, Angie Dickinson, directed by Howard Hawks. From 1968, the original Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby.
There you go.
I know there was a remake with Zoe Saldana.
One of the funniest movies ever.
Really? Did you watch it?
Yes. No, I'm talking about the original.
A lot of
people might give me grief for that, but the end scene, I watched it within the past, I don't know, 10 years for the first time, and I just laughed out loud during the last scene in a good way.
Okay.
I think it was supposed to be creepy and probably was for its time. But
it was.
Yeah, but for me, I just thought it was the funniest thing ever. But very good movie. Don't get me wrong. Very good movie.
But you laughed at the end.
But I laughed at
that,
the end.
That shocked the nation in 1968.
Yes. Yeah.
You're a bad person. From 1935, Charles Laughton in Ruggles of Red Gap. From 1998, Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Well done, Spielberg. From 1916, Shoes. From 1933, State Fair. From 1917, Unmasked. From 1945, V-E+1. From 1947, directed by Frank Tashlin, who is best known for working with Jerry Lewis and Jane Mansfield. This was an 18-minute puppet film sponsored by the American Lutheran Church called The Way of Peace from 1947. And finally, from 1971, it's not perfect, it's still a good film, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Absolutely.
Yep. Don't need Gene Wilder screaming at the kid. That wasn't in the book. Sorry, Tim Burton got that part right.
Yeah.
So there's those. Those are going to be forever. Go check those out, or you can find them on YouTube, I guess.
Sure.
We'll get to Dead People We Like, because we don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Nope.
director Robert Taylor, who worked as an animator on the original Fritz the Cat with Ralph Bakshi from 1972, and would later storyboard artists on shows like Challenge of the Gobots, The Flintstone Kids, and Tailspin. I know you remember some of those.
Oh, yes.
Taylor won a Primetime Emmy Award for his work on Tailspin. But he's the reason why I had him on here, and I'm really glad The Onion put him in for the AV Club. He was the director of The Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat. The sequel to Fritz the Cat had nothing to do with Ralph Bakshi, nothing to do with R. Crumb. It was just another excuse to make an R-rated cartoon in the 70s.
Absolutely.
So, if anything, this is a midnight movie. This is one you can you should have a few drinks and some nachos and enjoy that. Fritz the Cat, slightly better film, but there's a sequel to it, and it's out there. And I think it's – I don't know if it's still in print, but it's in the – I think the Avant-Garde MGM UA DVD list there. So,
you owe it to yourself to see it.
Yeah, you do. Did you see Fritz the Cat, the original?
I have seen
Without
some
the kids
of
up?
I've, yes, but I've seen some of it.
Do your kids know their grown-up movies, grown-up adult animated features?
You know, I don't know. I don't think so. We haven't really talked about them that
not
much.
Not yet.
I mean, there's stuff like The Family Guy, you know, of course, that they know that is like, that's really a little more adult.
Because I remember as a kid, I'm slightly older than you, but I remember, especially in the early incarnations of cable, I had heard of Fritz the Cat.
Yeah.
There was also Fantastic Planet, and there was also Watership Down.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an intro to, hey, this isn't Bugs Bunny. No, it's not.
It's funny how back in those days, such a legend could grow from those kinds of films that, you know, today they're much more accessible and there's not that, you know, so something like the Corman Fantastic Four movie from the late 80s where it was just legendary and now you can get it anywhere.
And well, it's like Let It Be. I don't, Emma's doing a school report on the Beatles and she thought, I thought you owned the movie. No, if I owned the movie, I would be tough. But that, as long as Paul and Ringo are alive, that film's not going to see the light of day. Mm-hmm. All right, we just got a few more minutes left. Well, there's a couple of films I like on DVD and Blu-ray this week. One, Woody Allen's latest film, Magic in the Moonlight. Mm-hmm. That's the one with Colin Firth and Emma Stone and a bunch of other fine actors, where he is a professional debunker. And he is sent to the south of France to come across a median who might be a con artist, played by Emma Stone. Guess what? He falls for her.
Oh,
it's one of Woody's pieces where he's traveling through Europe because that's where he's getting his financing. And the costumes are great, and the scenery is fantastic. And it's kind of a Woody script we've seen before, where a guy knows he's making the wrong choice, but he's falling for her anyway.
Yeah.
Nice, wistful film. The other one is, and this almost made my, I think this did make my honorable mention, but The Skeleton Twins.
Yes.
A great example of, and I guess you could call it a dramedy, of Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader using their comedic skills in a serious film about two siblings who haven't seen each other in a while, and they're equally as messed up as the other, and they kind of help each other to pull along.
And of course, at first they're, you know, pointing fingers at each other. Look how messed up you are. Look how messed up
almost
you are.
Almost a competition, right.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, you should see it.
Go check that out. Yeah. Did you see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I did.
What did we need another one?
No, we did not. But we have it.
And it's there.
Yeah, Michael Bay did it, and it could have been worse. I'll say that much.
Is Megan Fox fun to look at as April?
She is fully clothed the whole movie. You know, which is to say she's...
Well, yeah, so is April.
Yeah,
we're not getting the freaky fan fiction.
Well, there were no plunging necklines even. Let's move on.
That's also, Maze Runner, did you...
I did not see the Maze Runner.
You know why? Because we're not 13.
Right, yeah. That movie was not made for us. I'll get to that. I might get to that before the end of the year.
I think Emma has the book. So.
Yeah.
And then also the family dramedy, This Is Where I Leave You. It's Jane Fonda, Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, all theirs.
Yeah.
Also out on Blu-ray this week, the Criterion Collection has put out Tootsie, one of the funniest films of the 80s, one of the funniest films, period. The good double feature with Some Like It Hot. And The Love Bug. Do we need The Love Bug on Blu-ray?
I don't know, but I mean,
it was a Disney film from that was late 60s, but the Disney films of the 60s and 70s, late 60s and 70s, fascinating period, of course, before their, not their strongest era, before their resurgence in the late 80s. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here's some words to live by. Soylent Green is people, Zardoz has spoken, and what's happening at the Film Yap, Joe?
Lots of stuff. Actually, we have a lot of, you know, really fun stuff. Our writer, Joe Donahue, is doing a really great job on a new feature about soundtracks on vinyl. And it is called Film on Vinyl.
Clever.
And, you know, and we're, the format's kind of evolving. We were, the original idea is all reviews of vinyl soundtracks, you know, but we're going to get into more kind of in-depth discussions, I think, about different movies. And there's a lot of really nice looking stuff out there on vinyl for, you know, the Halloween soundtrack.
Newly released vinyl as opposed to just going through the bins.
Well, yeah. These are new versions of say, the Halloween soundtrack.
Ooh. Or,
yeah. And they have some really great art, some really great looking albums. The LPs themselves are really nice looking.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you have lots of gift suggestions for next week or for Hanukkah now. So, Joe, thank you so much. Go check out the Film Yap. I'm Matthew Sosie. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Next week's show, I think we might be best of the year. We don't know. Joe might be here. We don't know. I think Ed Johnson is going to be back. So anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. Kobe, come back. We miss you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Go Lions. Go Red Wings. Go Pistons somewhere. I got to do it. Bye.